Our scripture reading is from Micah in a more modern translation. But he's already made it plain how to live, what to do, what God is looking for in men and women. It's quite simple. Do what is fair and just to your neighbor. Be compassionate and loyal in your love. And don't take yourself too seriously. Take God seriously. Todd Allen is a native of Beaver Falls, graduate of Beaver Falls High School, graduate of Geneva College, PhD from Duquesne University. One of the things that Todd has developed over the last few years is a tour. It's really a civil rights tour entitled Returning to the Roots of Civil Rights. And as you came in, we were running some of the slides from that tour. He takes about 40 people each year, and this year's tour is June 19th to the 27th. And I think he said about a third of it is already full, so if you're interested in doing that. But we're happy to have Todd here on campus. Please welcome Todd Allen.
Good morning. I greet you this morning in the name that is above all other names, the matchless and wonderful name of Jesus Christ. My soul is glad to have been asked to be here and share in this chapel service this morning. I want to thank Dean for extending the invitation to me and to members of the chapel committee for all the work that you do. Also like to thank two very special friends, one who's here this morning and one who is not, Cindy Cook and Dave Guthrie. I thank them for their efforts this week in coordinating the Martin Luther King celebration, but more importantly, I thank them for their commitment to the cause of justice and for also gently reminding me to remain fast in that cause as well. As we move forward in this service this morning, if the Lord uses me to say something that moves you, feel free to say amen. That'll make me feel like I'm at my church down the street. If the Lord uses me this morning to say something that moves you and you're a little bit too reserved to speak back to me, feel free to sit in silence. That'll make me feel like I'm in my classroom lecturing. As was mentioned, for the past 9 years, I've been blessed to take people from all over this nation on a journey of the civil rights movement. But this morning, I wish to speak not so much about those journeys that we've taken, but more about the spirit which has guided that movement. As I've become immersed in the study of the history of the civil rights movement, I commonly hear people speak of this campaign in spiritual terms. Some have referred to the movement as a moment of providential history, the hand of God shaping our lives from the battlegrounds in Montgomery and Selma and Birmingham, to name a few. God actively being involved in creation, working out things to the good of them who love the Lord and are called according to his purpose. You see, it was God who called and led these foot soldiers in one of the greatest campaigns for freedom that the world has ever known. It was no mistake, no mere coincidence that in many instances this movement had its roots in the church, that many of these men, women, and children involved in this movement saw their involvement as an outward expression of their faith in Jesus Christ. Guided by the Spirit of God, by the belief that they were on the battlefield for and with their Lord, they put on the full armor of God. And in the process, they transformed these times of pain and peril into moments of triumph. You see, by faith, they were saying to the evil spirit of segregation, "Where is thy sting?" And to racial oppression, "Where is thy victory?" Through faith, They looked unto the hills from whence cometh their help, knowing that their help came from the Lord. During this time of year, people are pausing all over this nation to recognize and celebrate the legacy of a man whose name has become synonymous with this struggle for freedom, who embodied the words spoken in that passage by Micah. He was one who sought to live a life dedicated to justice, who sought to show love and mercy to friend and foe alike, who sought to walk in humility with his God. To some, Dr. King will be remembered as a great civil rights and human rights leader, and that he was. To others, he'll be remembered as a great scholar with the keenest of minds to dissect the social and moral condition of man, and that he was. Still others will recall him as one of the great orators of our day, and that he was. However, this is not how Dr. King saw himself, but rather he said that in the quiet recesses of my heart, I am fundamentally a clergyman. One of Dr. King's comrades was once asked the question, who influenced King the most? And without hesitation, he gave a simple yet profound answer. And he said, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Of the many recordings of sermons of King that I've heard over the years, one of my favorite has to be the one that was preached 2 months to the day, February 4th, 1968, before his assassination in Memphis on April 4th, 1968. In a sermon he titled The Drum Major Instinct, King used the metaphor of a drum major as a representation of our human desire for notoriety and for attention, that desire to be out front, if you will, and to be considered of great importance. It's a basic desire, he said, that many of us, if we're honest with ourselves, himself included, have wrestled with. But while admitting his own weaknesses in dealing with this desire, he puts an interesting twist on the struggle. He encouraged his congregation to harness that drum major instinct, not for selfish reasons, but in service to humanity. This sermon was so profound and so prophetic that it would be played 2 months later as a eulogy at his own funeral. In thinking about how he wished to be remembered, he said in that sermon, if any of you are around when I have to meet my day, I don't want a long funeral. He said, if you get somebody to deliver the eulogy, tell them not to talk too long. Tell them not to mention that I have a Nobel Peace Prize. That's not important. Tell them not to mention that I have 300 or 400 other awards. That's not important. Tell them not to mention where I went to school. He said, I'd like somebody to mention that day that Martin Luther King tried to give his life serving others. I'd like somebody to mention that day that Martin Luther King tried to love somebody. I want you to say that I tried to be right on the war question. I want you to be able to say that I did try to feed the hungry. I want you to say that I tried to clothe the naked. I want you to say that day that I did try in my life to visit those who were in prison. I want you to say that I tried to love and serve humanity. Yes, if you want to say that I was a drum major, say that I was a drum major for peace. Say that I was a drum major for righteousness. Say that I was a drum major for justice, because all the other shallow things will not matter. Unfortunately, much of what we say and do in honor of King today does little in remaining true to his wishes and his legacy. Too often we've made Dr. King a saint, a larger-than-life figure who in some ways is too good to be true. I remember a number of years ago being asked to visit an elementary school during the King holiday and talk to them about Dr. King. And I started off the presentation by asking the kids, how many of you know who Martin Luther King is? And I'll never forget a little boy excitedly raising his hand and said, I know who Martin Luther King is. And So I called on him and I said, well, who is he? And he said, he's a superhero for adults. Wow, that was funny, and I did laugh. In hindsight, as I thought about it, it made me aware of how far removed we've made King and the civil rights movement for many generations born after this period. Unfortunately, by placing King on a pedestal beyond our reach and beyond our reality, we disingenuously provide ourselves with an escape for any responsibility for confronting the injustices in our own day. We mistakenly believe that King was perfect, and since we're not perfect, we can't possibly make a difference in this world. While not disrespecting the memory of Dr. King, he would be the first to say that he was just a man, but he was a man who knew to serve his Lord. Like you and I gathered here this morning, he had strengths as well as weaknesses. He had talents as well as shortcomings. He had certainties as well as doubts. Another danger that I see sometimes in honoring Dr. King is that we replace the Saint King with a sanitized version of King, one who's reduced to mere symbolism, excellent for commercials, but devoid of any prophetic insight. This portrayal of King often sees him sometimes as merely a dreamer, frozen in time on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. Gone from this image is his stinging indictment of what he called the triple evils of society: racism, poverty, and war. And when we silence this part of his message, we're in effect seeking to still and quiet that prophetic voice, a voice that challenged us to be better as individuals and to do better as a nation. His prophetic voice is beautifully captured in this collection of sermons called A Knock at Midnight. If you've not heard it, I encourage you to listen. One message that I found particularly thought-provoking is based on what King describes as an imaginary letter written by the Apostle Paul, titled Paul's Letter to American Christians. In thinking about this sermon, I'm just struck by the everlasting and timeless power of the preached word. This sermon was preached in 1956 at the very beginning of King's ministry in Montgomery, Alabama. But in listening to it, it sounded as though it was just preached last Sunday, 2010. In this message, King artfully dissects the root causes of our social, economic, political, and moral dilemma. Through Paul, King said, "News has come to me regarding fascinating and astounding advances that you've made in the scientific realm. Through your scientific genius, you've been able to dwarf distance and place time in chains. I'm told of your great medical advances and the curing of many dread plagues and diseases. All of that is marvelous. You can do things in your day that I could not do in the world of my day. But I wonder whether your moral and spiritual progress has been commensurate with your scientific progress. It appears to me that your moral progress lags behind. Your mentality outdistances your morality. Your civilization outdistances your culture. Through your scientific genius, you've made of the world a neighborhood, but you failed to employ your moral and spiritual genius to make of it a brotherhood." There's a tendency by some today to speak of the civil rights movement in rather nostalgic terms, wishing somehow that there was a movement today that they could be involved with the way that the people were in the 50s and in the 60s. In fact, just recently, someone was lamenting to me what they believed to be the fact that there were no movements for change taking place today. I contend that nothing could be further from the truth. When I hear those kind of statements from people, they wish there was a movement, but there is no movement today, I respond that there is a movement they can be involved in. When I say that, they often look at me rather puzzled and confused and ask, well, where is there such a movement? And I tell them where two or three are gathered in my name, there he is in the midst of that movement. Many have wondered what made Dr. King and others involved in the movement so bold and so courageous. What made the students in Little Rock, Arkansas, march through an angry mob as they attempted to integrate the school building? What made the children in Birmingham face the pressure of fire hoses and the piercing bite of police dogs? What made those standing on the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama, face a brutal beating and even some even death to secure the rights of citizenship and the promise of democracy? This movement that we now celebrate grew out of the spirit of a people who, in the words of Mississippi freedom fighter Fannie Lou Hamer, said that they were sick and tired of being sick and tired. These were people who stood up where they were and when God called them, answering with the cry, "Here am I, Lord, use me." So the question is not where are the movements for freedom today, like the ones back in the day, but the question is where are the people responding to the call of God, "Here am I, Lord, use me." I submit to you that what made these people great is the same thing that can make you and I gathered here this morning great. And that is a relationship with Jesus Christ. And it's a relationship that isn't just something that we hear preached about on a Sunday morning or talked about in a chapel service, but has no relevance for the rest of our lives. No, these men and women knew God as their Alpha and as their Omega. They knew God as their way, truth, and life. You see, to understand Dr. King, one must understand who this man called Jesus was for him. Jesus was not just a prophet or some good moral teacher. He was not just somebody that King had read about and talked about on Sunday morning. No, to King, Jesus was a comforter who watched over and sustained him during the 13 plus years of his very public ministry. To King, Jesus was that great physician who healed him, who saved his life when he was stabbed in New York City while autographing books. To King, Jesus was that one who helped to raise the African-American citizens of Montgomery and ultimately citizens all over this land from the deadness of racial segregation and gave them sight amidst the blinding prejudices of the day. Jesus was the one who lifted them up from the burdens of Jim Crow society and gave them the spirit and confidence to walk in a new sense of dignity and a new sense of self-worth. Not long ago, I was talking with the Reverend C.T. Vivian, a man who worked closely with Dr. King during the movement, and I asked him, "What gave you the courage to fight for freedom? What gave you the confidence, especially with death being an ever-present reality?" I asked him, "Why didn't you take what appeared to be a safer way out? Go pastor a church." Now, I know some pastors may not think that's a safer way out. I asked him, "What made you so strong?" And I will never forget, as long as I live, his answer. He said that while some people are called to the ministry to lead churches, and he says some people are called to the ministry to get involved in missions. He said, we were called to the ministry for the purpose of the movement. Called to the ministry for the purpose of the movement. God is continually calling those who are willing to walk in this way. Yes, the call still going forth for one who will count the cost, take up their cross, and follow him. And if we're truly to honor the spirit of this movement for freedom, if we're truly to honor the legacy of this great cloud of witnesses, we must do more than merely celebrate a holiday one time a year. Rather, we must become people of faith. We must become people of action. We must become the people that God is calling us to be. Like Moses, we must declare to the pharaohs of our age to let the people of God go. Like Amos, we must cry out for justice to flow like a river and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. Like Isaiah, we must fear not, knowing that we've been redeemed. And so we boldly declare, here am I, Lord, send me. As we go forth from this place this morning, let us rise in a spirit of love, with a renewed determination and an unwavering commitment to justice, so that when our race is run, it can be said of us that we too were drum majors for peace, drum majors for justice, drum majors for righteousness. Because you see, all the other shallow things will not matter. God bless you.